welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Today's episode is for everyone, no matter the rank, branch, or uniform. That is because we are going to be analyzing how one masters the maintenance mindset. Maintenance cannot just be check-the-box operation. If you have that mindset, then I can truly promise you that you're going to fail. The success of your unit depends on how well they conduct maintenance operations. You won't make it to your objective if your truck is deadline because you failed to properly conduct preventive maintenance checks on it. So today, we're going to be learning from someone just on how doing the simple things and building a sustainable maintenance culture a unit can overcome any challenge and be successful in any fight. Thus, to walk us through how to turn AR-750-1 from a dry regulation into a lethal advantage, I have with me today Chief Warrant Officer 5, Jason Buzzard. Chief Buzzard has 27 years of maintenance experience in the Army to share with us today. He enlisted in 1999 as a 63 Hotel track vehicle repairer. After spending 9 years on the enlisted side and reaching the rank of Sergeant First Class, he transitioned to the Warrant Officer cohort in 2008. Of those 27 years, he has spent 9 years in overseas assignments providing maintenance and logistics expertise across every major theater of operation, including Europe, Africa, and the Pacific. His career is defined by a commitment to building sustainable maintenance programs and developing the next generation of Army leaders. Most recently, his dedication to excellence was recognized as a key member of the winning team for the 2023 Army Award for Maintenance Excellence. He currently serves at CASCOM as a capability developer, where he supports over 50 new quartermaster and ordnance programs directly shaping Army readiness for decades to come. I'm so thrilled to have you on the show today, Chief. Welcome.
So glad to be here today.
So I know that was a quick overview I had for your background. So can you tell the audience more about your maintenance background and career experience?
Absolutely. So after spending nearly 3 decades in the Army now and deploying across 22 different countries, I started as a mechanic just turning wrenches and now advising commanders. And what I can tell you is that you stop seeing a line of Humvees and you start seeing a capability. You see the truck that's supposed to carry personnel or ammo, or the one that's supposed to get the casualty out of a fight. And especially when you're in such austere environments such as Africa or the Pacific with already limited equipment, the difference between a unit that wins and ones that struggle is decided right there in the motor pool. And it's not about some new tool or fancy process. It boils down to a culture and mindset of ownership. It's about leaders who walk the line and check the work and soldiers who actually take pride in the equipment that they're signed for. Everything else is just noise.
And that's what we're going to be getting into today, because I think people get that sometimes maybe that tunnel vision, or they get, as you said, all this noise and they lose sight of what really makes a maintenance program tick and really makes it successful.
Right.
So I know I mentioned in your quick bio there about the award, the Army Award for Maintenance Excellence that you and your team won in 2023. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, absolutely. And that's something that I've took with me across my career is every organization that I go to, I encourage them to try to apply, because what it does is it makes you look at every aspect of your maintenance program. And so when you're competing for the AMI, you're writing about it, you're looking at your processes, you're checking your trucks. And so every unit that I've been in as a leader, I ensured that the commanders would at least try to submit a packet. And so it's definitely a hard process, but it makes you better and makes you really take a hard look at what you can improve upon, and brings out the competitive nature in the soldiers, in which they like that and encourages them to want to be part of the process and that ownership that we're going to talk about today.
I love that. I love the aspect of it being a competition, because that competition breeds excellence. And as you said, it is a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but it really helps you to get into the nuances, every little aspect of your maintenance program from the ground up. So I definitely highly encourage everyone out there to put in for it.
Absolutely.
You know, if anything, just, you know, going through the process, getting your reps and sets through it is going to, just by the nature of going through it, is going to make you have a better maintenance program.
Yes.
You'll identify things that you didn't even realize you weren't doing correctly.
Correct.
And while most of our listeners should know the answer to this next question, but just in case, who owns the maintenance program and also how do you implement it?
So, yeah, let's start with the hard truth, right? Maintenance is a leadership function, not a mechanic's chore. And so, as we talked about, AR 750-1 is very clear that commanders are held accountable for the conduct of maintenance. But to implement it successfully, it's going to take every person in the formation. And so I've seen so many units where leadership holds a Monday morning formation and then they immediately disappear or depart the motor pool. And so, you know, my advice is, you know, to implement a real program, you need to protect that time. Leaders need to walk the line, talk to operators, you know, ask them questions like, what is wrong with this truck? Is the part on order? Where are you at in the 10 manual? So soldiers are not going to ignore what leaders inspect. And so presence is the heartbeat of the program. And then additionally, just ensuring that mindset of ownership is instilled across the formation. This begins with property accountability. Too often I've seen senior NCOs and lieutenants signing for an entire platoon's inventory rather than sub-hand receiving the equipment down to the individual user. And so to fix it, right, we must empower our junior soldiers. The sergeant majors talk about this all the time, right, empowering soldiers and leaders. So assigning a vehicle directly to that PFC, for example, transforms their relationship with that piece of equipment. And I remember me as a young private, the immense pride I felt after signing for my first vehicle. And so that sense of ownership motivated me, right? I was in there replacing the torn seats. You know, I would maintain it meticulously, ready for any mission. Like, I wanted to take my vehicle on a mission because I was proud that I was signed for it. And so my name was in the window. And we've kind of lost that culture, right? Any walkthrough in a motor pool nowadays, you'll see vehicles and you ask questions. You'll say, well, where's that soldier at? And he's departed years ago. And so it's a clear indicator of a lapse in ownership and something that we must deliberately work to restore.
Yeah, it's one of the things you first mentioned. It's like a motor pool Mondays, like, where's Waldo at?
Right.
And people just like disappear. They scatter. The mindsets for a lot of units is, oh, I got to go back to the office. I got to get this.
Yes.
I got to get this order printed out. I got to get this con up done, or I got to do X, Y, and Z. But really, you need to have this dedication for this maintenance. And one thing I'll touch on is, like, you need to have a rotating maintenance. Like, you know, you have your weapons as well. You have your communication gear, your Sebring gear, you have your vehicle. Like, all this stuff requires maintenance and you should be rotating it through.
Yes.
And having to focus on this stuff. Because if, and so many units neglect that, they go in there, they'll do the, as we mentioned at the beginning, check the box. I went through, truck turned on, kicked the tire. Okay, I'm done for the day.
Yes.
And I can imagine you probably seen a lot of that in your time.
Oh, tons of times.
And now you mentioned how we're implementing this and really putting the focus down, you know, making sure leaders are there. So when they're going through there, you know, I know you said, oh, making sure the names are on the vehicles, because I know that gets so much, so lost and having that ownership. What are some other good ways to help implement that program?
So, yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, as we're talking about here, PMCS is the backbone of readiness. And while that's true, you know, I think it of is like, you know, the unit's early warning system. And it's just how you spot the small problems before it becomes a mission ending catastrophe. And so our own doctrine says that the goal is to preserve the Army's capital investment. But what that really means in plain English is protecting the equipment that protects your soldiers.
So what are some having a good preventive maintenance checks, you know, the PMCS, what is a good, I would say rule of thumb, but just a good way to conduct that weekly?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say the biggest mistake I see and see it often, and kind of how I indicated about, we talked about maintenance Monday and folks leaving the motor pool, but you know, they use Monday as a catch-all for everything but maintenance sometimes. And I vividly remember a Monday morning where operators and maintainers sat through an award ceremony, resiliency training, and then they had a FRG meeting all in the same morning. So it was like 2 hours before they could even get to their vehicles. And so it's about protecting that time. And so that's where that early warning system breaks down, because when you don't create that focused time and that mindset, that operator is not going to catch that $50 seal leak today. And then you go out on a mission and it's a $50,000 engine failure. And so maintenance Monday has to be geared for maintenance. And that means hands-on training, corrosion prevention, checking all the related COMMO radio equipment. Like you said, it's not just for vehicles. It's actually plugging up radios and testing them, because PMCS just isn't for trucks. It's the weapon systems, it's the radios, it's the computers, it's everything. It's not a two-hour task that you check off a list. It's a whole-day effort that builds readiness from the ground up.
So when we're going through doing this PMCS, what is a good way to do, like, I don't know, log units will implement rollouts as well during Motor Pool Mondays? What is a good way that you've seen that be conducted?
Yeah, absolutely. Rollouts are a phenomenal way. And doing alert rollouts where each week I did in a program where I would pick the vehicles randomly that had to leave the motor pool. And so that really means that you have to look at everything where, you know, you tell some units will do a 10% rollout, but they're able to pick their vehicles. Well, they're going to pick the ones that they know or FMC. And so when you do it randomly, you know, kind of like alert, and I would give them the bumper numbers just almost like in your analysis, like the night before, and say, hey, bumper number XYZ will roll out on Monday. And the battalion commander was standing there with me at the link up point. And so it's that ownership. And so they're like, man, it forces them to look at everything because they don't want to fail, right? Because that young captain knows that if he knows a battalion commander is going to be there, like, man, that's going to be part of my evaluation of how he thinks about my unit.
Now, is there a certain mileage you think would be good? Like, how to just go out, roll around the block? Is there like a certain minimum or maximum you should do?
Yeah, so obviously safety is a consideration, right? You want to make sure it's a safe route, but you want to at least get it out there, you know, a minimum of 10 miles, you know, that way you're getting the transmission warmed up, you're getting all the components warmed up so the fluid is running through them, you're getting to operating temperature so that you are identifying if you have any leaks, right? And that you're not too far away that, you know, you can call on your recovery crew, but it's really testing your equipment and getting out there and getting it through, you know, its reps and steps, as we talked about, so that you can really identify those early warning systems before, you know, it's a critical mission.
As we're talking about, you know, we're still on the topic of PMCSing and we're talking about rollouts. I know it's not, a lot of times people get lost in the fact that, oh, I did my PMCS before the vehicle left, but there's more to it. You got your during and your after. Any good advice when it comes to those? Because I know those have gotten forgotten about so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So the biggest thing I would say, the before, during, and after is when you're out there on your field exercises or your CTC rotations, where you want to constantly be checking on that vehicle because you could be caught upon it every time. And some of those after checks are imperative, especially when it comes to power generation and ECUs like that, because they have a lot of follow-on tasks that's going to set you up for the next time that you put that piece of equipment in operation that it's ready to go.
So yes, and I'm definitely really appreciate this wisdom when it comes to PMCS, because I think that really lays the foundation for doing this maintenance mindset, this maintenance culture, and that we're going to continue to get into in our conversation today. Because if we can get the basics right, you know, coming on first day of the week, focus on from private to colonel and focus on that maintenance of that unit, then I know we're going to be successful across the board. Now, kind of transitioning our conversation is, we'll get into the data. And I know data is everywhere. While it's not a new thing, I mean, George Washington still had data about, hey, how much and, you know, how many pieces of cannon he would have had, or what are his oxen or mules that have to move his equipment, what are those like? Where now we're looking at data on hey, what is fully mission capable, what isn't, you know, what's our parts look like. So we have a lot more, we have a lot more data, but we've always been doing it. So how do we turn this data that it seems like it's everywhere now, it's the buzzword, into combat power?
Yeah, so that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? So the most important thing to remember, that numbers without a narrative is useless. And so anyone can pull a report, but a leader's job is to find the story in the data. And so you have to look for trends, not just snapshots in time. And so kind of a real-world example, right? If you see five vehicles and all are having the same reoccurring transmission fault, well, that's not a coincidence. That's a critical data point telling you a story. And so that's a trend that you can act on. And this is what sustainable maintenance is all about, being predictive. And so we have to get ahead of the break-fix cycle that changes to the maintenance bays. And so the Army's doing a great job of recognizing that and providing some incredible tools to do this now. And so you have Here at Cascon, we have the new Sustainment Enterprise Analytics Program. You know, we have the dedicated data analysis course here at Fort Lee. And then you have so many other Power BI courses. And of course, you have Army Vantage and everything that they're doing with that system. And so me personally, I tell all my new warrant officers that they need to get off the Excel pivot tables and start learning these new tools. They save a lot of time and they're only getting better. And these are all designed to help us see the future before it happens. But the bottom line is, and what every leader needs to understand, the goal of data analytics isn't to make us better clerks. It's to cut down on the time we spend on the computer so that we can spend more time on the floor, you know, with our soldiers and our equipment. And that's how you turn data into real combat power.
So you mentioned some of these courses. Who would you advise take these courses?
I would say minimum NCO, right? If you have a future in the military or maybe outside of it and you just love data, I would say try to get enrolled into any of these. This is the future of what the Army is turning to. We are trying to be predictive. We're trying to get more people back on the floor. So if you as a young NCO, young warrant officer, you know, look into these courses, and there's many of them that are outside of ATARs as well, right? That you can take on your own, because YouTube is a phenomenal tool where people are walking people through everything nowadays. There's many nights I spent looking at YouTube videos on Power BI so that I can learn myself and implement that system into my brigade and make it better. But I encourage anyone that has an interest in making the Army a career and ensuring that they want to make things easier for their organization and handling their data and maintenance metrics to definitely go look into it and take them.
So then how does one truly build a culture of maintenance within their formations?
Yeah, so it's about the discipline of the routine, in my opinion, right? I like to say maintenance is like physical fitness. You can't do one 24-hour workout and expect to be fit for a year. And so I kind of thought about this, you know, as we talk about this question. And in my head, for operators, right, the one thing we talked about earlier in this interview, right, is being signed for your equipment. And so discipline means that TM is open and present. You know, even if you've checked that 1,000 times, right, actually PMCS in the vehicle and not just starting it up and sitting in it. And then for the leaders, right, the culture is built when the standard is enforced, even when op tempo is high. So don't let the mission urgency become an excuse for maintenance negligence. If you wouldn't let your soldiers skip the gym for a month, don't let them skip maintenance.
So that's, and I like that, you can't just do a 24-hour workout. I did 24 hours. I'm right. Good.
Yeah, we're good for the mission all year. I PMCS'd it last month.
And it's and on this, as we're going through and we're building this culture of maintenance, I kind of, you know, touch on the maintainers themselves, because I think sometimes they have gotten forgotten, especially when it comes to their own maintenance of their own equipment. For those out there, you know, I commanded a forward support company, and I know how hard it is where it's like, hey, I need to have time to take care of my own stuff.
Right.
And what is some good advice for the community out there, especially for those commanders out there who are commanding these support elements who have maintainers in the formation to be able to do maintenance on their own equipment?
Okay, so one of the things that I've implemented for the maintenance units, because like you said, it's absolutely hard to take care of the battalion or the brigade, and you're that FSC or you're that support brigade, you know, maintenance entity, is to dedicate mechanics to your operators, right? And so if you have other units that really rely on you as oversight, is you want to dedicate some of those maintainers to supporting them and also PMCS your own equipment. And so some of the other things that we can do is training, right? You have all the subject matter experts in your formation. And so what we constantly pushed is, hey, let's use some of these generator mechanics or some of these maintainers to give a PMCS class in the morning, so that we are empowering the operators. And what that does is that creates that time for you to focus on your own equipment when you've trained your operators and got them proficient.
What are your thoughts on doing like a maintenance Tuesday for your unit then, or something separate from everybody else's? Have you seen those work or not for maintainers?
Yeah, we've seen that before where we focused on a different day of the week, but you know, it's really hard because, you know, as we know that the emphasis on Mondays are on maintenance, and Tuesday brings its own shortcomings, right? And that's when a lot of times you're doing your unscheduled maintenance, your services. So it is really hard to shift the days. I've seen that done before, but I've also seen it not being protected because people don't recognize Maintenance Tuesday for that FSE commander. They're expecting him to be supporting the rest of the battalion or brigade. And so what I've seen work is just, you know, ensuring that you have a team that's dedicated to the unit that you're supporting. And you maybe you send 3 or 4 mechanics out there, you know, to provide oversight to that unit while the rest of your FSC folks are, you know, doing their own equipment.
Well, definitely thank you for that, because I know that can be a struggle for so many different leaders out there, because competing requirements, trying to take care of yourself. And that kind of gets right to our next question is like, what are some of the common mistakes or like pitfalls that you've seen that kill a readiness and a maintenance program? And really, how do we even avoid them?
Right. So, you know, like I said, in 27 years that I've been in, I've seen the 4 traps that kill programs. And so the first one is tolerating a single point of failure. So a critical vulnerability for any unit is allowing that specialized knowledge to reside with a single super operator or super mechanic. And it often happens organically when one NCO or soldier like Sergeant Snuffy becomes that sole expert on a complex system like an ECU or a specific generator model. And that creates that single point of failure. The moment that that individual is on leave or at school or PCSs, the unit's ability to operate or diagnose or repair that system is crippled. And so the solution is dynamic cross-training. Leaders must deliberately create and manage a training plan that develops multiple experts on every piece of equipment. And so we got to train our operators to be more than just drivers. They're the first line of defense of the maintenance system. And so the second one is paper readiness. You know, and one of the most dangerous leadership failures is expecting a green or FMC report without verifying the truth on the ground. And when a commander or leader knows that several vehicles are non-mission capable, yet the readiness report consistently shows 100%, it creates a false sense of security and erodes that trust. And it came to light for me during the natural disaster of the Maui wildfires. And so the Army was looking for ECUs, generators, light sets, things that they could support folks that didn't have power. And those are the very things that in units, a lot of times people send up 100% FMC reports when they really haven't checked. And so when I started giving warning to leaders and commanders that, hey, we might be tasked to provide this equipment in Maui, all of a sudden the readiness dropped down to 40 and 30% and it wasn't available. And so that's the key to verifying and ensuring that every piece of equipment that you have is PMCS, because you never know when it can be called upon to support a natural disaster or some mission. And so the third one is lacking a unifying command philosophy and presence, right? Effective maintenance requires the entire command team, the commander, the XO, the first sergeant, the maintenance tech, to be synchronized and speak with one voice. And this creates a transparent and predictable environment where standards are clear and consistently enforced. And this means being honest with the formation. If the mission requires staying late to get the job done, then leaders must stay late with their soldiers. It also means, you know, not being afraid to hold personnel accountable. You know, clear guidance coupled with initial counseling that outlines roles and responsibilities is the foundation. When the standards are not met, leaders must have the courage to take corrective action, ensuring the mission is accomplished and the standards are upheld. You know, and then number 4, I see this a lot, is misuse of key maintenance personnel. A common and detrimental practice is pulling the maintainer out of the motor pool for non-maintenance related tasks, and simply because they're a good NCO or they're good at paperwork, right? When a talented mechanic or operator is consistently tasked to the S3 or he's the operations NCO, they're not honing their primary craft. And so commanders and sergeant majors at all levels must protect their maintenance personnel from unnecessary tasking. And I know it's hard, and it requires careful analysis and manning and man hours. But leaders must ask, who is doing the bulk of the work? Are we developing junior leaders? Or are we burning out a few good NCOs? And so placing personnel where they're needed most in the motor pool, leading teams and turning wrenches is essential for long-term readiness.
And I've seen that myself so many times where you just burn somebody out because they're good at X, Y, and Z, and you just burn them out and you lose that good capability. But at the same time, it goes over your first point with you having that one subject matter expert.
Right.
And you're like, oh, we need somebody to set up to talk. Well, we have this one person that knows it.
Yeah.
He knows how to do the whole setup.
Right. The one guy.
And now they're gone. And I was like, now what do we do now?
Right.
And I think another one is just really get after accountability. Like everyone needs to have a piece of equipment, like sign it down to the lowest level, that lowest operator, and have them build that ownership over that piece of equipment. And I think that'll really help you go strides. And then another thing coming with our closing topics is, like, what are some good practical tips for Motor Pool Mondays? I know we've talked a little bit about this, but I just want to really center on this.
Yeah, so first, ask the why, right? Don't just walk up to the mechanic and ask when the vehicle will be fixed. You know, ask why it's broken. What's the root cause? Is it a parts issue? Is it a training gap? Is this the third time this month that we've seen this fault? Asking the why gets you a real solution instead of a temporary patch, right? And so second is empower your maintainers. And this is huge. If your mechanic tells you a vehicle isn't safe to roll out and you want to do a commander safety, FMC, exception, it's your job, to ensure that you're doing the right thing, to fight for the personnel, the parts, and protection from unnecessary taskers, and, give them everything that they need to do their job. When your soldiers know that you have their back, they're going to move mountains for you. And then third, what I really love is inject some friendly competition. Soldiers are competitors by nature. So create like a maintainer of the month program. You know, get creative and tie technical tasks to physical fitness. I've done maintenance competitions in units where we do, different timed tasks. Sometimes we pulled a Humvee. We did tire changes, maybe followed by a tactical movement or carrying the jerry cans, and put a trophy on the line. And I guarantee you'll see maintenance teams fighting to be the most proficient crew in the motor pool. And finally, the easiest one of all is celebrate the wins, right? Recognize operators and maintainers who are doing the right thing day in and day out. It costs absolutely nothing but a little bit of your time to submit a soldier for an award. And I promise you, it means the world to that private who keeps their vehicle in immaculate shape. That recognition is what builds a lasting culture of excellence.
Yeah, I love that, have that competition and then really being able to recognize excellence. And it's very simpler, dude. Just take that moment to write out that, get that AM written up for, as you said, maintainer of the month. And it's a good thing to highlight, because then other sort of say, hey, I want to be able to achieve this.
Right.
Then, and it helps, especially on that side, for promotion points.
It's all
these little things. And one thing I'll additionally add is, get education.
Yes.
Get out there and get the courses. Like, you go through your initial course, especially as entry-level soldier. You go through, you do your advanced training and maybe some follow-ons. But when you're done with that, keep getting educated. One thing has been told to me every year is like, hey, every year you should be doing another schooling.
Yes.
Your record should show every year that you've done a different schooling. And especially on the maintenance side, like there's a ton of new courses out there when it comes to data.
Yes.
Get out there and just continue to sharpen your toolkits. And I think that's going to really help with not just your Motor Pool Mondays, but your overall maintenance culture is really increasing each soldier's education. And don't prevent, which I know if we talked before in one of my warrant officer episodes, like, don't stop somebody from getting schooling because of a field training exercise.
Yes, that's so good.
Because like on the warrant officer side, we talked about before, like, they're very limited on when those classes are. Same with a lot of these other classes are going to be good for some of our junior soldiers when it comes to maintenance, going through these different courses. Like, get them in that schooling. You're going to survive. It just goes back to your first pitfall is you need to be able to rely. You need to have a bench build. You couldn't rely on just one person. So is there anything else today that we missed that we didn't talk about that you wanted to highlight?
No, I think you really highlight an excellent point that I didn't really cover is the education piece, right? All the new courses. We talked about the data, but like you said, also continuing their college, right? Continued ASCE courses would help you hone your craft. And I think that is a very valid point, right? Is never stop learning and continue taking those courses. That's going to, help you get promoted or help you be a better civilian if that's what you choose to transition out of the military.
So what advice would you have for the sustainment community? This is something I always ask all my guests, but I know you've traveled a lot. You said, 22 countries you've served in?
Yes.
27 years. So you have a lot of experience. So what can you share with us from all of that?
I would say that remember that maintenance is the foundation of fight tonight. It's the silent partner in every successful mission. And so when you invest in your program, the data, the discipline, and the people, you're not just managing machines and equipment. You're ensuring that when that order comes or when that natural disaster happens, the engines actually start. And so never just let the boring routine distract you from the lethal advantage that it provides.
Well, thank you very much for that. And so as we close out this just awesome, fantastic conversation today, we make maintenance so much harder than it needs to be. We've talked about a lot today on how we do that to ourselves. I mean, we become our own worst enemies.
Yes.
If we just follow the basics outlined in AR750-1 and just truly put into practice some of the or all this wisdom you laid out for us today, then we can truly be on our way to mastering the maintenance mindset. So I know we always get cards and letters. And so where can people find you at if they have any additional follow-up questions from today's conversation?
So yeah, I travel a lot as we talked about, but you can find me on Global. Buzzard's a pretty unique and easy name to find, and I always ensure that I answer every single email.
Perfect. And then I just want to thank you, Chief, for taking the time to provide our audience with just so much wisdom and for your dedication to maintenance. I know we can keep talking for hours about so many different aspects of maintenance operations because we really just barely scratched the surface on everything maintenance. So I'd definitely love to have you back in the show to continue this dialogue. But once again, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity, and go Ordnance.
Mastering the maintenance mindset does not end with the conclusion of this episode. You must get out in your motor pools and put into practice everything we discussed today. Build that culture within your formations, and your unit will be ready to fight tonight. Also, be on the lookout for the upcoming Spring 2026 edition of the Army Sustained Professional Bulletin, which is titled Army Maintenance Modernization, Predictive Maintenance, the Future of OIB Forward Repair, and Telemaintenance Operations, arriving mid-April 2026. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.